1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, welcome back to Mariners Pod. Gary Hill with you. Thanks for being here. At Mariners Pod on Twitter, the place to follow. So we have a lot to talk about in this one. There was a ton going on with the Mariners yesterday, including the draft, although we're not really going to get much into the draft in this one. We're going to do a lot of draft next week, some features, some interviews along the way. So some draft stuff coming next week. Today, we're going to have a few things for you. We'll talk about the game last night, the Mariners fall to Cleveland, so we'll break that down in just a moment. Some good stuff coming up. Rick Riz, we'll talk to Steve Johnson about pitching and also about his wonderful curveball. That comes up. Shannon Dreher caught up with James Paxton after his tremendous start. He's going to start over the weekend against Texas, and this is a big weekend against the Rangers. And I am very anxious to watch him pitch again. He was tremendous his last time out, but little insights on Paxton. That's going to come up in a few. And also an interview with, well, you may remember him from last year. Bernie from across the pond. He's a giant Mariners fan, and he comes to Seattle once a year for the games vary, but usually during an entire homestand. And we caught up with him last year on the podcast, so we did it again this year, and it's a fun conversation. And if there's anything this podcast has taught me is Mariner fandom is worldwide. That is well established with this podcast. But Bernie comes up, and it's great. So I think you'll enjoy the conversation. So that's going to come up in this podcast as well. Also, a big thank you to everyone yesterday who participated in the ticket giveaway. Again, the response was sensational. I appreciate it as always. And a big congratulations to Alex Ahn, who is the winner of the tickets. So he'll be going to a Mariners game here in the near future towards the end of the month. And, again, just thank you, everyone, for participating. I wish I could thank you each personally, but just know each of you, I certainly appreciate everything you do, all your participation, your feedback, everything else. You make this thing happen, and believe me, I deeply appreciate it. So we'll be doing this again. So we'll be giving away tickets in the near future again because it seems to be pretty popular. So, all right. With that in the books, again, congratulations to Alex. We'll turn to the game last night. The Mariners, a chance to take a series against the Cleveland Indians, but this one is pretty simple to break down when you look at it. In terms of what happened, Nathan Karns, again, some of what we saw against Texas, a little odd, though. He went 4 1/3, gave up just 2 hits, a couple of singles, but just didn't have his command. 5 walks and 5 strikeouts. And you look at Mariners pitching overall, he walked 5, Montgomery 1, Diaz 1, Benoit 1, 8 walks issued by the Mariners in this one. And Cleveland made the M's pay, including the big 2-run jack in the 8th inning off of Benoit.
Here's the pitch, swung on, well-hit ball deep to right field. Cruz going back to the warning track, to the wall, leaps up, and it is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Tyler Naquin gets it out of here to straightaway right field. His 4th home run of the year with Rajay Davis aboard, and the Indians have just taken a 4-2 lead in the ballgame.
4-2 lead at that point. Before that, though, Robinson Cano was having another big night with the long ball.
Here's the pitch, swung on, well hit ball straightaway center field. Tyler Naquin going back, looking up, goodbye baseball. Holy cannoli, Robinson Cano with his 17th home run of the season to straightaway center field. And just like that, the Mariners have taken a 1-0 lead over the Indians here in the bottom of the first inning. What a shot by Cano.
And then Cano would do it again.
The 1-0. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to right field. Going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Robbie Cano does it again. His second home run of the ball game. Holy smokes, about halfway up into the bleachers, the lower deck in right field. His 18th home run of the season. He hit number 17 to straightaway center back in the first.
Third game in a row, a Mariner has hit two home runs in the ball game. It was Nelson Cruz, then Chris Iannetta the game before, the game after, and then Robinson Cano yesterday. Three straight games. It's also the third time this year Cano has gone deep twice in a ball game that already ties a career high in a season. He's done it two other years in his career where he's gone yard twice in a ball game, which is pretty impressive. The Mariners now, they've done it eight times this year between different guys. That's the second most in baseball this season as they continue to play the long ball game, especially Robinson Cano. But it set the stage for the final at-bat of the ball game. Cody Allen came on in the eighth to try and close this down. Things got pretty interesting. Two on, two down. Robinson Cano up. He never has hit three home runs in a ball game. He was looking to do it and trying to win the game.
The 3-2 pitch on the way, and a swing and a miss, and the ball gets on by the catcher, Jimenez. Cano to first. The throw to first by Jimenez, and it's in time to get Cano for strike three, and the ball game is over. The Indians hang on, and they win it tonight by a score of 5-3. The swing and a miss on strike three. The ball got on by Jimenez all the way to the on-deck circle. The long throw to Napoli at first.
It got far, almost near the dugout, almost into the dugout, it looked like. But Jimenez, pretty good play, went sliding and fired it to first and just getting Cano. Otherwise, I mean, who knows what happens after that. But ball game ends right there. The Mariners fall to Cleveland. The series split. And now it continues as the Texas Rangers come to town to take on the Mariners in a three-game weekend series. Mariners taking on the first-place Rangers. Texas red hot. They beat Houston yesterday, so 37-23 on the season, the best record in the American League. Also in first place in the AL West, the Mariners 33-27 on the season. Now four games back of Texas for first place in the West. The Mariners kind of in the mix amongst the other teams after Texas. As it sits right now, Baltimore, who all of a sudden, they've won five games in a row. They've taken over first place in the East. They have the second best record now in the American League. And it really just points out, I mean, any team is about a four or five game winning streak away from taking control of their own division, or at least bumping themselves into the wild card mix. I mean, that's where we're at this point. As red hot as Boston was, just like that, Baltimore has taken the lead in the AL East. So Baltimore has the second best record in the American League. Boston still has the third best record in the American League, certainly still in the mix. Cleveland leapfrogs the Mariners now, fourth best record in the American League. The Mariners, the fifth best record in the American League right now, and trying to track down the Rangers after being swept in Texas last weekend. Texas, the best home record in the American League at 24-10. They've been great in Arlington, 13-13 on the road. This is how it dials out. Derek Holland against Asashi Iwakuma. They were locked in a great duel in the final game in Texas. And then game two of the series on Saturday, Colby Lewis against James Paxton. Very anxious for that one. And then Cole Hamels on Sunday against Wade Miley. So a big series for the Mariners. And these are huge when you talk about in the division, especially with a team you're chasing, because you're taking one game chunks at a time. And I mean, we saw how pivotal the three games last weekend was in terms of the division standings. And a chance to gain some ground back. So 7:10 first pitch tonight, Holland against Iwakuma. Saturday, same thing, 7:10 first pitch, and then Sunday at 1:10 at Safeco Field. And the parade of first place competition continues. Texas, Cleveland, and then Texas again. So a tough, tough stretch of the schedule. But the good news is Marte is back, And it looks like, anyways, Martin will be in center field starting tonight as well, and that's going to be fantastic. And I was looking over some numbers again. He has been one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball this year. We know that by watching him. I mean, that's kind of an obvious statement, but the numbers back it up, too. He's been sensational out there. He's going to help offensively. I mean, when he went down, he had the third-best OPS in the American League for center fielders, behind Jackie Bradley and Mike Trout. That's good company. And then with his contributions defensively, he was playing at an all-star level. So that's been a big loss for the Mariners, and he'll be back tonight for the M's against Texas. So there you go. You're all ready for this weekend. Right now, James Paxton is going to go this weekend on Saturday. Here's Shannon Dreher with the lefty.
You know, let's just go ahead and take it back a week. I think we looked at what we saw in San Diego and just kind of, well, no, that's not what we expect from you and not what you expect from yourself. And obviously the outcome, not what you wanted, but we thought you would turn that around quickly. You did. What went into that week?
You know, just a lot of preparation, I think. We mixed pitches a lot better last night. Changing speeds, location better, and just keeping them off balance, not just so they can just sit only on the heater. We had them thinking about other pitches also.
One of the things that was great to see, and the skipper's been talking about this with quite a bit of the starters, is you can't work your way into the game. You've got to come in and introduce to all of your pitches at once, and it looked like you threw everything in that first inning.
Yeah, we threw a lot of fastballs and cutters early, and then we went to the curveball and mixed in some changeups late. You know, it was good to have that kind of 2-3 pitch mix going on and introduce some changeups later in the game. Once I got going, I thought Chris did a great job back there, and it worked out pretty well.
Tell us about that cutter. We're seeing a lot more of it.
Yeah, the cutter's feeling really good. From the arm slot that I'm throwing from right now, it's just coming out really naturally, and it's a pitch that's easy for me to throw right now from that arm slot.
And the arm slot is new, and it's funny because you say that's natural. It was natural over the top. You've been all over the place with arm slots and the evolution, but you seem to find different things that work at different times.
Yeah, you know, it's been weird. Throwing over the top, I feel like I was just getting too high, and I was throwing from a place of weakness, I think, way up there. So when I brought it down a little bit, it just felt really fluid and loose and just a lot easier on my body and my arms. So I think it should help me out a lot.
And it's pretty cool how that was discovered. You told me last night, but Lance Painter kind of had you do a little exercise there.
He did, yeah. It was one of those things where he said you roll a ground ball to your backhand side and then just pick it up and throw it without thinking about it. And when I did that, the arm slot that I'm at now is where I threw the ball from. And he's like, when you're not thinking about it, you pick up a ball going backside and then just throw it. You're going to throw it from your natural arm slot.
How much of an adjustment was that? I mean, this is a fairly new change.
It was. You know, the first time that I went out and pitched with the adjustment, the velocity was way different. I was throwing a ton of strikes. I was, I think the biggest adjustment for me has been the breaking balls and getting used to staying in that position, throwing my breaking balls because the shape of my pitches are different, so I have to visualize them a little bit differently. And that's been the biggest adjustment for me is getting the breaking balls across with the new arm angle.
And just explain that difference in shape.
Yeah, so, you know, my curveball was probably more, not quite 12-6, but more 12-6 when I was over the top, and now it's kind of more slurvy looking. So looking for that break and keeping my arm in the same slot as my fastball is really important. I don't want to change my arm slot on my curveball so that when the hitters see that and the arm slot change, they know a certain pitch is coming. I want it to be, you know, unknown.
It's good to have a little bit more side to side, it sounds
Yeah,
like.
Absolutely.
And then lastly, that velocity. I mean, the first time you see that, what are you thinking?
I mean, it felt great. I honestly had no idea how hard I was throwing last night. I knew it was hard, but I didn't know it was 100. I was just trying to throw through the catcher and just keep in direction.
Well, I think Iannetta probably has a very sore hand, but that's a good thing. James, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And here's Rick Riz with Steve Johnson.
Chance to sit down and talk pitching with Mariner reliever Steve Johnson. And Steve, let's go way back when you started. Little kid comes up to you, says, Mr. Johnson, I want to be a pitcher. Where do you start telling a kid about how to be a pitcher?
Well, I know the radar gun has come into everyone's mind, you know, and these kids want to go throw hard, but I think the most important thing you can tell some kid is to go and throw strikes. I know every coach at any level, whether it's in you're playing 5-6 years old or, you know, high school or in the they want someone who can throw strikes because odds are they're going to get themselves out, especially when you're younger. So, you know, everyone's worried about the curveball and stuff. If you can just throw a fastball and even just a changeup in there for a strike, you're going to go really far, and then you can learn the other stuff later.
Okay, the mound is 60 feet 6 inches from home plate. You're throwing to a target, home plate, which is 17 inches wide. How do you get that command with the fastball and find the release point and be able to control your fastball?
It's just a lot of repetition. You know, you get muscle memory, getting your body to be able to do the same thing every time without even thinking about it. So when you get out there and you're trying to think about, you know, okay, I'm lift my leg up, putting, you know, no, that's not the time to do it. You gotta do it, you know, practice. And, you know, I used to be in the grocery store with my dad and mom, and they're picking stuff up, and I'm just in there doing my delivery.
Really?
And yeah, it was just, and I would just pick it up and do it wherever, and it looked really weird, but it would just be something that was just, okay, I'm just going to practice this real quick. And you just kind of find ways to do it, and I was just able to, for the most part, throw strikes. And every now and then, it becomes a lot harder to get that ball over the plate, but, you know, it happens from time to time.
Throwing peaches and apples around aisle four or what?
No, I mean... You know, I used to play a lot of wall ball and you know, like I said, the grocery store stuff or just wherever you're waiting, you have to wait a lot of places, you know, Home Depot, all those places where you're bored with your parents, and I would just find ways to kind of to do stuff, and I love doing it. So you just find ways to practice, and that made it fun.
Okay, let's go on the baseball field now. You're out of the grocery store. Hitters have different stances. Pitchers throw from different angles, over the top, three-quarters, sidearm, submarine style. How did you find your delivery?
Well, I had a lot of help because of my dad being who he was and playing, and he wanted to keep me healthy. And so he always just tried to find the best way, best delivery to make it so that I'd last a long time. You know, he had to do a slide step where his arm got a little lower, caused a lot of shoulder problems for him. So he made sure that my arm got up on top, and that was a big deal for me. So I was taught that from an early age, and I just stuck with it.
And the age-old question is, when should a kid start throwing a curveball? I know it's probably different for everybody.
That's always a tough question because, you know, it's based off of how you're going to throw the curveball and then, you know, how you're taught and where your arm angle is. And those are all factors. And I was taught at around 9 or 10. The way I was taught was, you know, to not break my wrist, not really snap it. And a lot of kids are taught that way. And I was taught to hold it like I hold it now, just throw it like a football, to where it's a full arm going forward and to not really go and just really snap your wrist. And I still throw it that way. And, you know, it's a little slower. It's a big break. You know, my arm's been able to stay healthy for the most part. It's been fortunate in that regard. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those things. You really don't need it at a really young age. Sometimes if you throw it the right way, it can be okay and it can lead to no injuries.
Visiting with Steve Johnson here on Rick's Tips. And, Steve, let's talk about the changeup. There's different changeups that guys can throw. Felix has that circle change that he throws 90 miles an hour. And then there's changeups that are pitchers back off 10 to 15 miles an hour. How did you find that particular pitch, and how do you throw it?
That was always a struggle for me when I was starting. I was trying to find a pitch that I could just changeup that I can throw for a strike. And I always struggled to, you know, my fingers a little longer. So when people showed me grips, it never really worked for me. I just gripped it one time, and it felt good, and I just kept with it. And I was, as a starter, I was able to really throw it in there for a strike. As a reliever, I don't get to throw it as much, so I'm a little more inconsistent with it. But it's still something that when I throw it well, it's a good pitch for me.
Best advice for a kid, just go out there and have fun, practice, 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 and throw strikes.
That's the name of the game right there. And as long as it's still fun, then you're doing something right.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're doing a lot of things right. You're doing a great job out of that bullpen. Thanks a lot for being our guest here on Rick's Tips.
Thank you.
And finally, big Mariners fan, it's Bernie.
For people that don't remember, tell us your story. Where are you from? How did you become a Mariners fan?
I'm from a city in the north of England, in Yorkshire, Gary, Leeds. City about 800,000, mainly rugby league and soccer, particularly soccer, and a little bit of cricket. I've watched baseball since back in the 80s, but I've not particularly had a team that I followed in those days. I used to watch a little bit on the TV in Britain, But back in the late 80s, I think it was 90, I was on vacation, just touring the Carolina coastline, and I just got watching in the hotel. It was a famous Yankees Mariners games when Randy Johnson was pitching. I remember seeing this guy on the mound, this goatee beard, looked evil. he looked evil. And I do remember him, and I had friends on holiday and they couldn't drag me away from the TV sets after that, because I saw that series against the Yankees. So of course when I came back to the UK, I followed it the best I could for 4,000 miles away, but the Mariners were my team from then on, and sadly we never got any further after the Yankees. But since then I've followed them. I've been keeping the internet, as that progressed over the years, I can follow it a lot closer. It's very difficult, you know, say 4,000 miles away, but this is my fifth year now. I've managed to come across on the bounce to see games. I'm doing 7 games this trip. Last year I think it was 6, and I actually got a wedding in last year. Friends that I met on my trips, I was invited to their wedding. They built their wedding date around the matches that I was watching, and actually the couple are with me tonight. They're coming in for the game. But yeah, it's a lot easier now that I've no ties, I've no wife or children, so I can come across, get a nice run of games. Ties in with my work. And I came in last Tuesday, and I'm here till I'm going to see the Padres, two games, and then I fly back on next Wednesday.
So you're 8 hours ahead. How do you follow the Mariners on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I'm at work. I've got the schedule. My office looks probably like this. I've got more pictures. I think I'm a season ticket holder of my soccer team. There's pictures of Safeco Field. There's the bobbleheads. But I follow it when I get into work early purposely. You know, I'm in at work. I start at 9. I'm in at 7, and I can go on the internet and I can read about every game. I can go on the Mariners website, get all the news. Friday evenings are the best when they're playing, because I've got the app. So I go to bed at say 9, 10 o'clock, and then I'm awake at 3 and 4 in the morning with the app back watching. If it's a close game, you know, and I wake up then about. I get out of bed about 9 o'clock, and then by the middle of the afternoon I'm absolutely full. I've got matchsticks under my eyes because that's how I follow it. To be honest with you, we do have the satellite and the various digital stations where you do get baseball, but I've not got that. But if I did have it, I'd be watching any game that'd be on, and work would suffer, I'm afraid. So it's very much the internet and the app that I use, and say I have friends here, and I'm always on the mail order getting the latest gear sent to me. And if ever you see my Facebook pages when I'm out, go to the soccer game, and you think I haven't got any of my own club's stuff on. I've got the Mariners tops on. So yeah, I am quite a fanatic. It's probably taken hold of me big time the last 3 or 4 years since I've visited, because I've met some great friends since I've been over here, and I've also made welcome. I mean, the ballpark itself, I've got a shout out for all the attendants here, because you know I've been to Wimbledon, I've been to the British Open Golf, I've been to the Grand National, the horse racing. The quality of the attendance here, and I think you've got to give a shout out for these guys, because a lot of them are solid unsung heroes. And I think when I go home after the last game, I'm really disappointed walking back to my hotel, because I could sit here every night and watch games because of the atmosphere. And that's winning and losing, you know.
Well, you've seen some pretty fun games so far on this trip. What was it like when Martin hit the walk-off home run?
Well, we all love sport. I mean, I love my soccer. I love any live sport I can get to see. It's one of those moments. I don't know if anybody saw the Champions League final today. It was went down to penalties. Real Madrid players, Real Madrid fans will remember that final penalty. Ronaldo scoring, they were there. That was probably, of all the time, I've seen my soccer team win the FA Cup final at Wembley, 1-0. I've seen us win what is now the Premier League. That on when was it? Wednesday, Tuesday night. That is up there with probably one of the best, if not the best, moment of live sport, because the pressure, 2 strikes, 2 outs, well, you know, the run's on, but you never think you're going to be there. And I'd moved around, I'd left my seat, and I was moving near the exits as the strikes were going in. And I just got sat down for that. I thought I'd better sit down, just one last pitch, and just hear the crack of the leather on the wood, and you see it flying. And it's quite a walk back up to my hotel near the Pike Market, and there were people hollering and shouting and high-fiving all the way up the road. And when I got into the local bar round the from the hotel, and everybody, all the barmen and the people, they were saying, "You're at the game," and they wanted to know, you know, what it was like. And it was one of the best sporting occasions I've I've been. The only thing that probably beat it now is a playoff at a World Series place. To see the Mariners in the first World Series, that would be great for everybody.
What is it about the game of baseball that's captured your imagination?
I think if you go back to old black and white films or documentaries that we're getting in Britain, you know, on our documentary channels, you do see some of the footage. Mm-hmm. And I always say that baseball, I think that's America's game. Now, I'm sure NFL fans will reel back in shock horror, but I do feel baseball tells you everything about the American sporting love, the culture. It's just something there that grabs me, you know, and I just think it's something, when you're in a ball game, it's got a unique atmosphere. We have cricket matches, you know, and I'm not a massive cricket fan, but there's something about the atmosphere at a ball game that just says everything about this is sport in America. This is live sport done, and it's presented well both throughout the media outlets as well as live at the ballpark. So I mean, I think it's one of the best 2 or 3 hours you can have, you know, as a sports fan.
Well, Bernie, it was so great seeing you again. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Gary, and hopefully see you next year.
Okay, we're ready to go then with the first round. The first selection goes to Seattle.
Seattle selects number 1154, Cincinnati, Ohio, George Kenneth Griffey, center field.
Seattle's selection is George Kenneth Griffey, center fielder from Muller High School in Ohio.
See you later!